Welcome to the Pastor and Intern Podcast. My name is Eric. I'm the pastor on the podcast. I'm here with my associate, Will Emery. Will, how are you doing?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm here.
Okay.
You know, you introduce us every time, and you say that you're the pastor on the podcast.
Yeah, I am.
Do you think anybody questions that normally?
No,
like why do you specify each time that you're the pastor?
Because it makes sense. Like, we shouldn't call it the Pastor and Intern Podcast if there's not a pastor and an intern on the podcast.
I don't know.
I feel like it's the name of the podcast.
Maybe.
Do you not know the name of the podcast?
I mean, I do. Maybe we should change it.
No, definitely not.
Yeah,
I like being the pastor.
The two pastors.
I like that. Pastor and Pastor Podcast.
Yeah.
That sounds a little weird.
The Dulce Pastors.
Dose. Okay. Anyway. Today on the podcast, I thought we would talk about two things. Number one is two books that we're reading right now.
Oh, I'm only at two. I can only do two.
Yeah, you can only do two.
I've got like six.
Yes, indeed. We get it.
You know what?
Two books, and then talk about what we talked about in the Lock and Key class. We talked about General Revelation, which I know sounds so invigorating, but I thought we could talk about that just real quick. And by real quick, I mean quicker than I did last time, which was yesterday. You won't get this podcast until Wednesday?
Yes.
Right? Okay, so what I taught on this on Sunday, so you're getting kind of the leftovers from Sunday. So my first class that I taught, we took like 30 or 40 minutes and we were done. This one, it was like 4:54, and I hadn't even got to the New Testament. But it was a good conversation. It was really good conversation.
It was a good conversation.
I'd rather have good conversation than talk about all this bunk, this head knowledge.
Right.
So, anyway. All right, so how about you go first? How about you pick one of the books that you've read or are reading and talk about it?
Okay, so one of the books, I'm not even going to do, one of the books I just read or just finished reading, so as I told you earlier, I discovered Audibles on my trip this past week, right?
Yeah.
Or audiobooks. So I finished listening to a book called Educated by Tara Westover, okay?
Is Tara a guy or a girl?
It's a girl.
Okay.
This book is all about, it's a memoir. It's like one of the New York Times bestsellers right now or something. My goal this Christmas was to read something different than what I don't normally read. And so what I normally read is Christian living, something to do with Christian philosophy.
Shocked.
Because of school, right? And so I wanted to reach out a little bit, do something a little different. And so I picked up Educated because I heard that it was a good book. As my Apple Watch keeps trying to talk to me.
It does.
Anyway, so I picked up Educated, and it was really good. It's a little long, but it was about a family who lives in, like, I think it's Idaho or Utah. I'm going to say Idaho. I think it's Idaho. I don't know why Utah came to mind. Pretty sure it's Idaho. But they live, like, they're that family who don't think you don't need to go to the hospital. She wasn't in school ever until like she was 17. They're that family that was like, well, God will just heal you, you know.
Sure.
You don't need medicine. You don't need doctors. They do the essential oils stuff, and
gotcha.
Nothing against people who use essential oils, but they like did these things. So it's kind of crazy. She was abused by her older brother.
So is this like a true story?
Yeah.
It's a
memoir.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
some people make memoirs and they're not real.
Yes, yes. This is a true story.
Okay, gotcha.
But she got, so she didn't, never went to high school, never went to any sort of, she went to undergrad at BYU. Sad memories.
So she Mormon?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
She is Mormon.
Okay, this makes more sense.
Yeah, that's important to add. Yeah, you're right. So she went to BYU, and then so she graduated from BYU, and then went to Cambridge. Maybe I think she went to Cambridge, got her master's or graduate degree, and then went to, I believe, Harvard and got her PhD. Now that may be wrong, but she has her PhD.
Okay.
And she'll tell you, if you listen to one of her interviews, she'll tell you that she still doesn't have a GED or high school diploma, but has her PhD.
Interesting.
So it's pretty crazy. But anyway, so that's just, it's a really good book. I mean, it's interesting to read. It's different, but it was pretty good.
Okay.
So that's
cool.
That's my number. What about you? What's one of yours?
Okay. Since you kind of went off the cuff, I'm going to go off the cuff.
I did.
I'm currently reading a book that I'm trying to make famous.
Okay. You're trying to make the book famous?
Yeah, it's by this guy named J.R.R. Tolkien. Yeah. I don't know if anybody's heard of him before.
His son just passed away.
Really?
You didn't see that?
I did see that.
Okay.
R.I.P. Right. It's called The Two Towers. So it's a Lord
I've
of the Rings.
I've never heard of it.
Lord of the Rings. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but yeah. It's Lord of the Rings. It's really good. So I grew up watching the movies, obviously, and they're a little long. First one's kind of hard to get through. But if you could do that, the next two are great. And they're also long, but they're
they
great.
They're very long.
And they've made like
4 hours there's long.
Like, yeah. Well, the like
they're like
the extended
long.
Cuts are like 4 hours.
Who
long.
Has that time to watch that movie? That's ridiculous.
One time, me.
Crazy long.
And I've watched the Fellowship of the Ring one time, and I've probably watched The Two Towers and The Return of the King like 7 times. There's really good stories. And they don't like focus on all the stuff that modern day focus on, like all the politics and the love stories and all that stuff that I don't care about is what the movies nowadays are about.
Yeah.
But these Lord of the Rings movies are books are great. Because I always the common phrase people use is you should read the book. Don't go watch the movie. You should read the book. Mm-hmm. So people say, like,
yeah.
Harry
yeah.
Potter, Hunger
Good
Games,
movies.
Stuff like that. You should do that.
Yeah.
And I agree. But with Lord of the Rings, they're just so long. Like, these books are long. And they do so many people's different perspectives. And so, to me, growing up with the movies, these books fill in, like, a tremendous amount of gaps for me.
Okay.
And so, like, it helps me visually. I feel like I know what the characters look like. I feel like I know what they sound like when I watch the movies and when I read the books. But then I meet characters that are in the books that aren't in the movies, and it I don't know, it uses some part of my imagination that I don't normally use. And so,
interesting.
The Two Towers is really good, and I'm only I don't know how many pages I'm into this book. Okay, so apparently they're just one book, so I'm on page 495. But as you can tell,
you're not.
I've It starts at page 403.
I was about to say, it looks like you're at the very beginning.
403. So I've almost read 100 pages.
Oh, so there. So, I see what you're saying. So
it's
all one
book.
Big book.
They've just split it up into
They've
three.
Split it. Okay. Yeah,
okay.
I see what you're saying.
I guess back in the day.
So is that based loosely on Christian ideas or no?
I think J.R.R. Tolkien said it wasn't.
Okay.
Okay. So you can just take that for what you want, but there's definitely... there's definitely like a Christ style of hero story, like this hobbit who's not very good at anything goes all the way and, you know, does something impossible to save everybody and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is themes like that, but
I still don't think I finished the fourth one.
Yeah.
I probably never will.
No,
it's just going to sit there. Yeah. I've watched 3.5. The Hobbits were really good, though.
They were good.
I enjoyed those.
Well, and they can use a lot of modern-day technology with those movies.
Yeah.
So it makes them more visually... I like
enjoyed
this.
Those, yeah.
Where in the originals, you just have to look at orcs the whole time, and that's not that's not super great.
Yeah. But it's not fun.
Anyway, so just The Two Towers. I finished The Fellowship of the Ring last year. It took me forever to read that book. I finished it last year. And I was like on the last chapter and I lost the book in my car somewhere, which I know sounds crazy, but I was cleaning out my car and I'm like, huh? And I pulled it out and like it had been in the sun so long that the pages were like brown. And I'm
yeah.
like, I've never finished this book. How many chapters do I have left? One. So then I finished it. So I was like, yeah, I read this book this year. So anyway, and that was a good book and this one's good too. So The Two Towers, Lord of the Rings.
Shout out.
It's pretty ballin'.
Yeah, rest in peace. His son just died. Yeah.
R.I.P. Even though he had nothing to do with this book.
I actually think he had a lot. I thought I read that he, like, somehow, I don't know. I don't.
He did.
I'm not going to say anything.
He did is it Silmarillion? I think he did that.
Yeah.
But that's it.
I don't know. Because weren't those published after J.R. Tolkien's dead?
Don't know.
Dying?
Yeah. It does not
give me
that information.
We don't. We know nothing.
I'm literally reading the back of this, and it's not
good. We
so, yeah, that's one of mine. What's your next one?
Okay, so my next one, well, does this one even count as a book?
Sure, for the sake
no.
of argument. just tell us the book.
Okay, so this book is called Within Reach. So it's basically about how to keep your students connected and not leave. After they leave the student ministry, where are they going? What are they doing?
Yeah.
And it is basically a book on all statistics, as Eric said, doesn't count as a book.
Too many pictures.
I mean... Look, that's not technically a picture.
That is two whole pages of one picture.
Okay. Yeah. But what's interesting in this, there's a lot of, it's just different statistics and things. It's been really, I mean, I am reading it for a class. I don't know that I would have read this otherwise, but it is a good book.
Well, I'd heard of it before. I've thought about getting it as like a parent resource.
Yeah. Well, it's very, it shows you the importance of like adults in your in students' lives. It shows you the importance of pouring into your adult volunteers. It's really interesting for those who are in student ministry. Now, if you're not in student ministry or not a pastor, then it may not. If you're a parent, it could be interesting.
Yeah.
And important. Because it is important to figure out why the dropout rate. I can't remember the statistic. I mean, what is it? And you may know off the top of your head. But I mean, it's a pretty big number of students who leave the youth ministry and don't plug into a local church.
Yeah, they graduate and don't go back.
Yeah.
And if they do go back, it's like 5 or 6 years later.
Yeah, I don't remember the statistic. But the crazy thing about that is they polled like a group of students and said, did you plan on doing that? And they said, no, we either, A, got busy, we had some sort of, like one of the examples is that they go off to college, right, and they have some sort of party on Saturday night.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about like some crazy party, right? That
just a party in general.
Right, just some sort of like welcome party to the
sure.
dorm or whatever. So then they're tired and they don't want to get up on Sunday mornings. They sleep in.
Yeah.
Then the next week classes start. They have a big project due. The only time their group can meet for the project is on Sunday mornings. So they miss again going to church. And then that sort of continues until it just becomes a normal thing to miss church on Sundays. And then now they're unplugged from that. And the book does a great job at saying what can we do better at keeping students plugged in? And shocker alert, it's not just with what the youth pastor does that keeps them plugged in, right?
Yeah.
Like you see our students maybe 2 or 3, maybe 4 hours a week.
Maybe.
Right? And their parents see them
a lot
more.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But that can be in a whole different conversation. But anyway, so it's pretty interesting. I mean, it does have pictures and statistics and things. So that's why it's flying through it. But
I wrote down the name a while ago. I got like a Lifeway flyer or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, new book.
It's worth reading. I mean, it's not gonna take you long, but it's worth looking through to get the statistics. And I wish they made some sort of like PDF or something that just had all the statistics on it. Instead, I mean, Ben Trueblood's really good, but
he is.
Instead of having to remember them, it's just right there. But anyways, so that's the second one. So what's yours?
My second and final book is Reimagine Retirement by C.J. Cagle. So C.J. Cagle is not like some well-known pastor or whatever. He's just not.
Those are normally the best books,
he's
by the way.
More like a guy who worked his whole life and is super involved in church and ministry.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm.
He's a good dude. He's really humble and admits up front that he's not the expert. And if you're looking for an expert, gives like 4 or 5 examples.
Interesting.
You know, so, you know, it's probably the worst way to write a book. Like, hey, read my book. But if you don't want to, read these people's books, you know. But so I've been really struggling with the idea of retirement. Oh, look at that. Personally, I've just not, it is a Christian worldview. I've really struggled with it.
Okay.
I've especially for the past it's almost been a year I've been thinking about retirement.
Okay, can you give us like just a really quick glimpse into why?
Okay, I don't know that retirement is essentially a biblical principle.
Okay, when you say retirement, define retirement for us.
Okay, so now that's the question.
Yes.
What is retirement?
Yeah, that's exactly.
I think some people define it as I'm going to work for 40 years and then go sit on a beach or a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what they think for the rest of their life. But if from a Christian worldview, from God's ultimate mission in the world, that doesn't seem like it fits, and I don't like that. And so I just can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to the realization that I can't do that. But then there's the flip side, right? Like I don't want to be 70 and then let's say I'm completely healthy, as healthy as a 70-year-old could be, and then like something happens to me and I become like a vegetable. And I don't have any money to depend on, and then I become a financial burden to my kids. I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that it sounds irresponsible and pathetic and awful. And that happens all the time.
Yes,
like, it does. Especially reading this book, he's like, dude, this happens all the time. It actually happens to more than half of retired people. And which freaks me out because I'm totally unprepared for retirement. Now I'm 29, about to be 30, so I've got some time.
I really like the cover of that book.
I do too, right? It's really appealing.
I'm a big sucker for books that look good.
You know, it's like, don't judge a book by its cover, I totally do.
Yeah, I will pick your book up if it looks nice.
Like, I bought this specific Lord of the Rings cover because I like it better than the others.
Well, no joke. So there's a book called, it's way off topic, but there's a book called... I Can't Find My Tom Hanks or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And it's definitely like a romantic comedy book. And I didn't know that, but I almost bought it just because the cover looks really nice.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? This makes me want to read it. I didn't because I'm not interested in that kind of stuff. But anyways, go ahead.
So anyway, so I'm not done with the book. I'm still reading it. Honestly, I don't even know where I am right now. I've probably read 4 chapters. Let's see. Yes, 4 chapters.
Yeah.
And because I've started highlighting and writing my books now. So that's how I know what chapter I'm on.
Yeah.
So it talks about, you know, it gives you a foundation for retirement. It gives you 3 different views of retirement and which one biblically lines up with it. And the hardest part about retirement is the Bible doesn't speak to retirement.
It doesn't.
It just doesn't. Now, it does talk about working.
Yes.
It does talk about being responsible. It does talk about, you know, taking care of your financial burdens and not being in debt to anybody. It talks about that.
I wonder if not speaking to retirement is speaking to retirement in some way.
I don't know. But he's done a really good job so far. I'm really impressed. He's really shaping, he's giving me things to shape my own view on retirement.
Yeah.
So, because he talks about it from a bunch of different angles and just give me a lot of things to talk about. And there's a guy on staff that just got hired, that retired,
yes.
And I told him about it. I was like, dude, I'm going to read this, and if it's any good, I'm probably going to just give you this one or buy you one.
And I think that's a good example of what you mean by an okay retirement, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he retired, and I don't think he mind sharing this, but he retired from a full-time job, and now he's working part-time for us, but it's not like he's out sitting on a beach every day.
Yeah. So let me just read
the golf course.
Yeah. Let me just read you some of the chapter titles. First 3, understanding modern retirement, what the Bible says about retirement, which is not much, by the way, and imagining a God-glorifying retirement. Like, those are the first 3 chapters. So, and it's in parts. So part 1, reimagine your perspective on retirement. It's pretty good. Planning for a reimagined retirement, saving for retirement, investing for retirement, deciding to retire. It talks about all that stuff. So
interesting.
Funding your retirement, living and leaving a legacy, stuff like that. It's interesting. It's definitely
sounds
an
interesting
book. And it's got enough Jesus in it to where it applies, but like it's not like a strictly biblical book. Does that make sense?
That's what I was going to ask you. Is it, well? And I see from the subtitle there that it is. But if I didn't know if it was a secular book or a Christian book. But
no,
I
it's a Christian book. But it's got just some really good simple advice type stuff that's illogical.
Yeah,
that doesn't necessarily, you know, take everything from the Bible because there's just not a whole lot.
Right.
But it does, anyway. So, yeah, those are my 2 books.
Yeah. Can we do an honorable mention?
Sure. Give us an honorable mention.
So, this book's called God and the Transgender Debate. And the only reason it's an honorable mention is because we both have finished it.
Yes, we have.
And it's a pretty good book.
It's a very good book.
It is a
ballin' book.
Very good book. And if you are a Christian and more curious about this transgender thing, and it deals a lot more with than just transgender, I believe, but he does a really good job at,
he's super fair,
he's really fair, and it's like you said, it wasn't last week, it was the week before last on the podcast, that he's gonna make you want to love those who aren't like you a lot more than you do.
Yes.
And he does. I mean, he talks about, what is it, gender dysphoria, is that what he calls it?
Yes.
Which is those who struggle with
any sort of
gender issue,
yeah.
It talks about how it's a real issue. It's a real problem that people struggle with.
And it's easy to read.
It is very easy.
You know what
read.
I mean? Like, it's not this book that's so convoluted with definitions and stuff.
It is very,
and if
very
I'm not mistaken, he has like little blocks on some pages that define things. Is that right?
Maybe.
Like just on random pages? Am I wrong about that?
I think so. I don't see any.
Maybe this is this reimagined retirement book. I know that it doesn't, but no, he does it in the end.
He does it in the very end.
Yeah, so he has a list at the very end that defines.
Well,
everything.
He does, like, his last few chapters are really helpful because they're like chapter challenging the church, chapter 11 speaking to children. So how do you deal with
the kid that says I'm not sure?
Yeah, and then 12 tough questions, which is interesting.
That chapter is interesting.
It is very interesting.
Because he gives you like a snapshot answer to everything.
He does. Like, could someone be transgender and Christian? Should parents keep kids in a state-run school if those schools promote transgenderism?
Yeah. And it's his perspective, and he's really open about that.
He is, but I think he's fair. I think he is.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we just focus on sins that are actually harming people? Transgenderism is harmless, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting. But it does make you, I like books like this because I think Rosario Butterfield's, who is another person we've talked about before, does a good job of this as well. But she makes you not, she doesn't just give you this definition and say why this is wrong.
Yeah.
But he does as well. This is a real issue that people are struggling with.
Yeah.
And so.
It's a good book.
It is a very good
book. I would give it to anybody. It's a very good book. I would literally buy it for anybody. It's that good.
Yeah, it's a good book.
It's super good.
Good book. Yeah. So, all right, well, that's what we're reading right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, so Will, why don't you tell us about the greatest Bible translation ever created?
Yeah.
Why don't you do that?
So the Bible is called the CSB, the Christian Standard Bible.
That is a nice name.
That is a very nice name, right? It's a more readable translation, okay? Eric, you do this a lot better than me. I don't know why you asked me to do this.
Well, what do you like about it? Just tell me what you like about it.
I like how it's readable. Mm-hmm. It's easy. For example, when I do a discipleship thing with one of our students, he also reads the CSB Bible.
Mm. Converted.
Good translation.
Converted, man.
No, he did it before we even... Anyways, different topic.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it is very. It's a very good translation because, and I keep saying readable, but it's not just readable, but it's also very literal.
Yeah, it's accurate.
Yeah, it's accurate. They don't just take the. It's not like the Message Bible. No offense to the Message Bible.
Is that really what you want to say about the Message Bible? Because it feels like it's not.
That is exactly. I am a proponent. I got.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I got chewed out one time at another. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When I talked about the Message Bible, and somebody got really offended about it.
Oh.
Have I ever told you that story?
No. Don't tell me right now. Tell me later.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Anyways. But yeah, CSB Bible is really good. It's very easy to read. Very literal, accurate translation. Used to be the HCSB, but they cut off the H.
Yep.
Now it's just the CSB.
And that's what we recommend to people.
That is what we recommend. That's what we read. Anytime you hear us talking about scripture or reading scripture, that's 95% of the time that is what it'll be.
It is truly the bomb.
The CSB Bible.com. It is.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
All right. So let's move into general revelation.
Okay.
Do you want to lead this or do you want me to?
No, you go ahead.
Okay.
I literally just talked about it.
So I'm going to mama bird this stuff and regurgitate it into the mouths of our listeners. Here we go. So we talked about general revelation or natural revelation, whichever one you want to say. I know that's confusing because in Christianity, what we like to do is give three things like three names. And I hate that. Like, let's just give it one name.
We can't just do one thing.
Let's be easy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's not be hard. General revelation, basically, it's God's revelation of himself in general. So, in broad terms, that's what someone said yesterday at the meeting there. They said, you know, it's almost as if it's very vague. Like, this is just God being vague. It's him in the world. And so we study out of, what's that book called again? Man.
A Theology for the Church.
Theology for the Church, yes, by Aiken.
Which we've talked about before.
Oh, yeah, I love that book. And so it's based out of that. So if you're like, huh, this sounds really familiar. Well, yes, it is, because it's the foundation for the whole thing. And so he talks about the moon. So this is Russell Moore. He writes this chapter. Russell Moore is pretty fantastic. Now, me and him can disagree on some things, but he's still pretty fantastic.
Good guy.
And so he says the moon. So the moon... it's crazy. It's in the sky. It comes out sometimes. It's not there some other times. It's like a half moon. Sometimes it's a full moon. Sometimes it's a really bright moon. It's in a different place almost every day in the sky. Like, it just is.
Right.
And so if you don't have any sort of background into religion and you walk out of your house and you see the moon, you could have two different responses, right? You could have a good response or a bad response. You could see the moon and go, you know what? I think there's a God that instituted all this stuff, right? Like, you could have that reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
you can.
No one's, now, you're not saying that that's Yahweh, right? Like, that's not what you're saying. You could be close, but that's not what you're saying. It could be whoever put that in the sky. But also, you could look at the moon and go, I'm going to worship the moon, which sounds ridiculous, right? Like us in our modern thinking. Like, why would you worship the moon? That makes no sense, you know? But as people of religious habit and worship habit, we find things to worship. And so the moon is there. And the week before, I had talked about how even our good and pure intentions can be sinful. Mm-hmm. You know, like even our best thoughts. So just because you want to worship the moon can come from a good intention. It can come from a place of good-heartedness, but it's still sin, and it can still be bad. And I think we need to realize, we need to separate creation and God just a little bit. Just because God created it doesn't make it divine. It doesn't make it on equal standing with God, or God wouldn't be God at all. And so you get these two verses that, well, they're not two verses, but two different things, two different places in Scripture. Psalms 8, 3 through 4 says, "When I observe your heavens, the works of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you set in place, what is a human being that you remember him, a son of man that you look after him?" So it's almost like he's saying, when I look at the moon and stars, I'm reminded of how much God loves me, how much God cares about me as mm-hmm. a person, not I need to worship the moon. Like, that's not what he says. And in Job 31, 26 through 28, "If I have gazed at the sun when it was shining, or at the moon moving in splendor, so that my heart was secretly enticed and I threw them a kiss, this would be an iniquity deserving punishment, for I would have denied God above." So even if your purest intention is to worship, but that worship ends up being of the moon, we've denied God and we've sinned. So there's this two... There's this, the sun and the moon can give you thoughts of love for God, Yahweh, but it can also give you love for the sun and the moon. Especially if you would just go look at history, especially the sun. People have really loved the sun for whatever reason. I guess, you know, if you're a farmer or something, you love the sun. I don't know. I'm not agricultural at all. I grew up in the country around cows, not that guy. Yeah, put me in the city, please. So anyway, so those are kind of the introductory things that I talked about. You know, the moon is created by God, and it's beautiful. And when a person gazes at the moon, it should be a moment of wonder at our Creator, but it can also cause us to worship the moon. This is the same moon, but different responses. You know, and then the book defines general natural revelation is the self-disclosure of God to all rational beings, a revelation that comes through the natural creation and through the makeup of human nature. So basically, everything in nature is created by God, and it reveals to us God himself, but in a vague and general way. And so, you know, general revelation is like a piece to the puzzle, but it's not all of the puzzle. It's just one piece. General revelation is for all people everywhere to show the beauty of creation and to inspire worship from them. Only special revelation, the gospel, is for the people of Israel and the church. You won't find the word general revelation in the Bible, but its concepts are in the old and the new. You know, creation is deemed good, but Exodus 24 forbids us to worship it. It's not that good, okay? And this implies that nature gives us a desire to worship. So that's kind of general revelation in a nutshell. I mean, it's this idea that nature can tell you something about God, but it doesn't give you all of it. Does it make sense?
Right.
So anyway, what are your reactions to that?
So I think we can look at general revelation, especially when you say, I think we can look at general revelation and think, well, why is this important? Why do we care? If it can't do anything for me, if I can't do anything because of general revelation, then why does it matter to me? I think it is important, but I think it's important because it points us to something greater.
Yeah.
But that would be what we talked about next week, so we can't get into that yet.
Well, and I think you've got to know. I agree that it's important, but I think it's almost necessary.
Well, yes. And I think it's important for us to realize that. Well, it's not as if what God created was bad or wrong, right?
Yeah.
Or that it was insufficient.
Yeah.
For us to point to Him, it's not that it's His fault, but that it's our fault because of our sin.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's Calvin who said that you technically should be able to look at a tree and think, "Wow, I have a great creator mm-hmm. who created me in that tree." But because it's not because of that, there's anything wrong with that tree.
Yeah.
But it's because of because of sin in my life has made me look at that tree and think, "Well, that's just a tree."
Yeah.
Right. That
right.
doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But we should be able to look at that. And I think that's the importance of general revelation is that when we look at these mountains or we look at oceans or stars or moons or whatever, they should draw us to worship the one who created us. But because of our sin, we need something more than that. Because now we as Christians can look back and think, wow, this really, I mean, this is beautiful and he did this for me.
Yeah.
But before you know about Christ, you can't, you're going to want to worship the moon.
Yeah, because you're going to worship something.
Yeah.
You're just going to.
We're religious beings, right? We're going to point to somebody who's greater than us.
And like I said in the class yesterday, I really struggle with this concept. Like, I don't get the nature thing.
You got a lot of flack for that, too.
I did. I got mocked and ridiculed for that. But it's like, I just don't look at a tree and go, man, God's so good. Like, I just don't do that. That's just not me. And I know I'm, like, oversimplifying it.
Yes.
But that's just me. And, you know, the only thing in nature that I look at and I think, you know, God is good, God really does have some sort of, you know, this creativeness about him, is when I look at people. Like, that's the only time when I'm like, man, God does some crazy awesome stuff. Just because people are so different and we have our own talents and interests and we all look different and, you know, all this stuff. You know, that's the only time in nature do I go, yeah, I can see that. I can see the beauty of God in people. And I think that has to do with, you know, how we bear his image in a lot of ways.
Right.
But as far as like dirt, I'm just not there.
Well, I don't know that I am with soil either.
I'm just not there. But then, you know, I read, you know, doesn't Louis Giglio have a book called Indescribable or something? I think it's called Indescribable. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know.
And I tried reading it and I just couldn't. And I know that it's like highly regarded and people want to look at that kind of stuff.
I know he has that sermon that everyone talks about.
Yeah.
Which I think is the same thing.
It's the same thing. And I was just like, I can't identify. I can't identify with the stars and the universes and the planets and all this stuff. Like, I just don't identify. But luckily, I feel like most people do identify, and that's great. Good for them. I'm jealous. Maybe when I'm 50.
Right.
I'll get it.
So can we talk about the pressing question that was dealt with yesterday a lot?
Sure.
This idea of if somebody's in the middle of Africa,
the
jungles of Africa.
Yeah.
And they've never heard of the name of Christ. They're worshiping the moon, I guess. Do they die and go to heaven?
Right.
Or go to hell?
Yeah. So this question was a question I really never thought about until I was in college. Mm-hmm. And when I was in college, I really dealt with it. I don't know what was going on in my life at the time. I don't really have that great of a memory. But, you know, I dealt with it. Like, I took 3 or 4 months and dealt with it. Mm. And so I read a book called, I think it was Radical.
Yes, by Platt.
By Platt, and he introduced this thought to me. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled with it. I really, really did. And I was like, okay, so if a guy walks out of the middle of the most random remote parts of the earth in Africa, or whatever. I don't know why we choose Africa. But
I don't either. I don't know why we choose Africa.
I don't know
either.
Why we do. But let's just say that this place is Africa.
Yeah.
And he walks out, and he doesn't know God. He doesn't know anything about the Bible or Jesus, nothing. And he lives his whole life, and he's a good person, and blah, 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 blah. And he dies. The question is will he go to heaven or hell?
Right.
And I think it's important to know a couple things, and I didn't address this yesterday because I just didn't have time.
Right.
Because this question takes
a long time. And it's also both general revelation and special at the same time.
And it's hard. It's a hard question and a harder answer probably.
Yeah, it is.
And so...
Yeah.
You know, and so I look at that situation and I go, well, that person's going to hell. And I know that the first response from people is,
you jerk.
You're a jerk.
How do you think that way?
And that doesn't sound like a just God. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you think. And I think the part that I did not discuss in class yesterday was that view, like that thought process. I think that's an okay reaction. Now, I don't think that that's an okay view.
Yeah.
I think it's an okay reaction, but I think it is a underestimating view of sin.
Yes.
I think that we look at sin.
I think it's fair.
Most of the time, because of our own sin nature, in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't look at it the way that we should, and it's serious, and God takes it seriously. And, you know, I don't know if in God's justice, he's okay with this scenario happening, right? Like, I don't know that God is great with it.
Right.
But I think that it's what we deserve is the issue. Like, we don't deserve to know God. We don't deserve to have Jesus in our life. And so if this person lived their whole life a sinner and rebellious against God, and in his justice, he says, I never knew you. which is the truth.
Yeah.
Which is the absolute truth. Now, does that situation actually happen?
That's the question.
That's the question.
That's the question.
I don't know.
I don't either. Because I'm that same way. So I linger towards the, I agree that if there is somebody out there who has never heard of Christ and just lived a good life, whatever, he's going to die and go to hell. Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't have the, which, and my answer to somebody who says, well, that's not right, is what are the, I was talking to one of our leaders yesterday, and it's what are the essentials of the gospel, right? Say we just go to a VBS level, and we talk about the ABCs, right?
Yeah.
What is it? You admit you're a sinner, believe, and then confess that he's the Lord Jesus Christ, whatever. So we tell our kids, or we tell other people when you're sharing the gospel, we tell them this.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between that person and the person in Africa or wherever? There isn't a difference, right? We're all people. We're all sinners. We're the same.
We're the same.
So if you're telling me that I have to go share the gospel with people who are here, or we do this on Sunday mornings, we do this whenever,
yeah,
then why do they have to hear the gospel, but they over there in Africa don't?
Right.
Right? That feels like there's some inconsistency
there. Right. It's one way or the other.
Yeah, right. But anyway, so, but I don't know that you can't tell me that there's some sort of, which this gets into special revelation, but sure, God is not in some way
doing
revealing himself over there.
Yeah.
But we would never know about, because they're in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
People,
yeah,
groups that are, we think they're unreached just because we've never been there.
Yeah. Well, now, again, it's not only are we underestimating and devaluing the pressure and awfulness of our sin,
yeah,
but we're also in that same thought process, think that missions are just underwhelming,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
like, well, missions is great and all, but it's just something that we do.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and if that's the thought process, I can totally see how you would say, oh, well, yeah, well, they're good.
Right.
Because the reality is if they're going to heaven because of something they've not heard and information they don't have, then when you send a missionary to said man in Africa and he explains the gospel of Jesus Christ to that person and they reject it, you've automatically sent them to hell.
Yeah, you've condemned them, right?
Yeah. So if that's the truth, if they're saved solely because they have no other knowledge, then we need to not be missionaries anymore.
Yeah.
But then we have to think to ourselves, but is that really what the Bible's telling us to do? No, that is not. That is the, that is so not what the Bible's telling us to do. It's almost the opposite.
It is.
Go
the opposite.
Everywhere and tell everybody about Jesus.
Right.
And if it's true that, which I believe that if the person in Africa goes to hell because they don't know Jesus, then missions are critically important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are like, the red lights are flashing and people are dying, going to hell, and we need to go do that.
Yeah.
So then it almost puts all the pressure on missions, which we don't like, right? Because that would imply that we need to go share the gospel with people, and that puts pressure on who? Us.
Hey.
Yeah. And we don't like that, right? We don't want the, because I believe firmly, and you can feel free to not agree with me on this, mm-hmm, that let's say that happens. Let's say that the people in Africa die and go to hell because we don't tell them. Let's just say that that happens. When we get to heaven, God is going to tell you that you're responsible for that. He's going to be like, I called you to go speak to so-and-so, and you did not. That's on you. I firmly believe that's going to happen. Mm. I so believe that that's going to happen. Now, is that going to excuse the person in Africa?
No.
It's not, because they're a sinner, and they need their sins forgiven. Okay?
Right.
There's a clean break there. But so anyway, so you, yes, so you get into this whole issue, and we'll talk about, in another podcast, we'll talk about the doctrine of humanity and,
yes,
sin and,
yes,
all that, yes, stuff. We'll get, yes, there.
We'll get there.
But that was a question that we had to deal with.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a question that almost everybody deals with.
Yeah.
As a Christian or even as an unbeliever. And I think we have to be careful to not create inconsistencies that aren't there.
Yeah, they're not there.
We need to be careful creating hypothetical situations anyways. And we also need to be careful and think that God can't do something that we just don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's if we can, we're limiting, and I know we're not, but in our minds, we're limiting.
We're putting God's all the responsibility on us.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just not, God is in complete control of all this,
right,
stuff.
Right.
Right.
But he knows better. And so.
That's very true. Praise the Lord. He knows better.
He does. And what's that, the verse in Isaiah? I mean, his thoughts are higher than ours.
His ways are not ours.
Yeah,
you know, we're just different.
He knows better.
Okay, so let's go through the Old and New Testament here. Old Testament, Genesis 1 through 3. Genesis reveals that nature is not self-centered or divine, but is the result of the creative activity of Yahweh, the God of Israel. So that comes from the Aiken book, page 68. Genesis does a great job describing nature, day and night, changing of seasons, sexuality and gender, the distinction of humanity from the rest of creation. It does a great job of doing that. But it also describes the problem, which is death, alienation, frustration over procreation and creativity. Something has happened to the created order and nature is broken. And it's kind of like what we were talking about last time, you know, like just because nature is made by God doesn't mean that it's not broken.
Yeah.
That our sin has shattered the way that God had intended for things to be. And now we live a different life. And so, and again, we don't have time to do this and it's frustrating. But if you're listening to this podcast, Psalm 19, 1 through 14 is some great stuff on creation and God's purpose for it and what that means for us. Also, Job 38 through 41 is probably some of my favorite scripture.
Yeah, really good.
It's really good. It's God basically telling Job that to sit down and to be quiet.
Yeah.
Job 38, 24, God is the maker and commander of the light and wind. So God creates said things, controls said things, and is not intimidated by things like that.
No.
38, 36, God made people wise and capable of understanding. So I think that that's another thing that we need to, you know, people aren't stupid, you know, like people know better. They know things. And, but God is not intimidated by those things because God created people that way. And Job 44 through 5, Job realizes his insignificance and how small his power is. Like God, like Job is really small and he figures that out. And in Job's defense, he's been surrounded by some terrible friends that have been telling him some really dumb stuff for what, 37 chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then God comes in at the end and says, okay, this is the way that it is. And you're going to need to be quiet. So God is not intimidated by anything or anyone. And I think, and I noted this yesterday, we need to give some credit to God's providence in our life. You know, that we can breathe our next breath is God's created order, and he allows you to do that. My next step is only because God allows me to do that. Even people that hate God, God still loves them enough and gives them enough common grace to live. You know, common grace literally is just that God allows you to be alive regardless of the circumstances.
Yep.
And we just need to realize that we don't deserve that.
No.
We haven't earned that.
Mm-mm.
And there's nothing that we can do that. And so, anyway. Any other comments from you about the Old Testament?
No.
Okay.
Big fan.
And another thing, I know, man,
like
right?
The Old Testament.
And another thing that I told him yesterday is that, you know, general revelation. You know, people all the time ask me, especially students, go, well, how were people in the Old Testament saved? You know, they want to know the answer to that question. And I say, well, they had faith in the Messiah that he was going to come and do all these things for them. And they were like, well, how would they know that if they don't know Jesus? And it's like, well, just because Jesus isn't named doesn't mean that they can't believe in him, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
Genesis chapter 3 tells us that he will squash the serpent's head and it will strike his heel, you know, things like that. And it's like, that's enough.
Right.
Like, you just need to know that the Messiah is going to come and save you from your sin. And that's what you need to know. So I firmly believe that Moses is in heaven. I firmly believe that all of these church fathers are doing that. Like, I firmly believe that. And that's easy for me to do. And I honestly, that's enough thought about it.
Yeah, it's pretty hard not to be when the guy comes down to the burning bush. I mean, it's going to be pretty hard not to believe in that guy.
Yeah, it's pretty tough, right? Like, that seems like special revelation, you know.
What?
Seems like that.
What is that? We'll get there.
And what's great is when people are like, well, I think that Isaiah and Moses are just waiting to be, they're dead and they're waiting to be with the Lord or whatever. And I think that's an interesting perspective.
They're purgatory.
Right? Mm. But.
No, probably not.
But when they appear with Jesus in the transfiguration and they're literally standing there with him, kind of seems like...
That's pretty good proof, right?
That's pretty good proof that they're with God, like, in paradise.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not as if he went down and got them.
Yeah. Like, how terrible of a deal would that be?
Right.
All right, hey, back to purgatory.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so that's the Old Testament. There's some general revelation for you. Okay, New Testament. Let's fly through this because I know we've been on here for a while. John 1, 1 through 4, like I said, if you've not done a study on John or John chapter 1, you need to get right with Jesus. Like, that's what you need to do.
Mm.
You need to just stop listening to this podcast and go do that. I would really like to memorize this chapter in my lifetime. I really would. Like, this is just such an important chapter. But Jesus is himself special revelation, but he's planted in natural revelation. I love that sentence.
Yep.
You know, he is divine, 100% God, but he's planted in a 100% human body.
Yeah.
You know, so he is in of himself the marriage of natural and special revelation, which I think is great.
Yes, that is good.
He is divine, but he's also human. He instituted natural revelation. Jesus was involved in the creative process of the world. Mm-hmm. No one thing was made without him. And it makes sense because if you think about it, when God said, let there be light, it's almost as if Jesus was like, yes, Dad, and bam, it happens. That's how it, in my mind, now that may not be of how it is, but that's in my mind, you know. And it makes sense because Jesus in his ministry was like, I don't do or say anything that the Father doesn't tell me to do or say. That's literally what he said. And I'm like, that makes sense. Now you can agree or disagree. I don't really care. Okay, Acts 14, 15 through 18. Barnabas and Paul are trying to bridge the gap between the natural and special. God has given everyone food and rain. He has given people so much joy and provision, even those who don't love God. So he's saying, listen, this is the way it is.
Common grace.
Exactly. The Apostle Paul expands on this idea in the first three chapters in the book of Romans. If you've not read Romans, get it together. Okay. And it's such a beautifully written book. And I think I said that yesterday.
Fairly difficult.
Yeah, it's fairly difficult. But, you know, if you were to look at them, like if you studied Greek and you were to look at the Greek that Paul uses in Romans and the Greek that Paul uses in Ephesians, you would have thought like a third grader wrote Ephesians and this super really intelligent PhD student wrote Romans. Like, they're so different. And the only reason I know that is because a Greek professor who knows more than me showed me that. Anyway, but it's just the way it is. Romans 1:20, for his invisible attributes, that is, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen since the creation of the world, being understood through what he has made. As a result, people are without excuse. So it's almost as if natural revelation, through the brokenness of our sin, has given no human being an excuse on the planet. You know, like it's just the way that it is. And then Romans 1:25, they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served what has been created instead of Creator who is praised forever. Amen. So literally we took God off the throne and we put things that he had made on the throne. And that could be ourself. That can be our video games. That can be our intelligence or education. That can be another person, a boy or a girl. That could be anything. But we've taken created beings and put them on the throne. And then there's this great quote by Augustine that Moore uses. In his sermons in North African church, Augustine appeared to his hearers to think about the crops growing, the fish leaping in the sea, the stars above them, all things they cannot help but notice. So why wouldn't it occur to you to cast an investigative eye about for the Creator who did all of this, he asked, which is on page 83. And I think that is why God made nature the way it is. And what's interesting is that I believe that what the life we're living is God's plan A, not plan B. God didn't make a mistake. And it's interesting that when God made creation, that it still resembles him being creator, even through the brokenness. I think that that's a good note.
I agree.
So, yeah. So that's
general revelation.
That's general revelation. I know that I talked a whole lot about that, but this is like the...
It's part of your... it's part of the foundations of a biblical belief. I mean, it's got to be... It's important.
It's super important. Right. And I hope and I pray that God gives me some sort of appreciation for nature. I just do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not. Like, I'm sympathetic to animals, but I don't know that makes me go, man, God's just so great. I love my dog. Like, that's not what happens. that's not what happens.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
General revelation.
So that's general revelation. That's week two of our Lock and Key study. So if you're going to First Baptist Church and you want to know more about theology, Baptist thought, and just biblical concepts, it's something you should come to. It's at 4:00 on Sundays. We try to be done by 5:00. I try to get out of there by 5:00. I couldn't get out of there till 5:15. But honestly, it's in my wheelhouse and it's what I love to do. So
yeah, it's good stuff.
It's my favorite thing. Theology and the ordering of it is my favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much fun. Like, literally, my football team lost Sunday, and I cared, but I didn't care as much because it was just so much fun. And I love the interaction from people, so it's literally not a lecture. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't stand up there and lecture. I can. I enjoy it, but I want, like, feedback from people. I want people to tell me what they're thinking. And I don't expect you just to automatically agree with everything that I say, and that's probably the best part. Because there's some people in that class that don't agree with
good
everything.
Good people.
And they're great people.
Yeah. But thanks for listening to the Pastor and Intern Podcast. We are thankful. As you heard last week, you heard week one of the Lock and Key. So they are following along.
Yes.
But they actually heard the in-class version.
Yeah, I didn't record this one. That's my bad.
Well, from now on, there'll be just us dialoguing about it. Yeah. And it will get more interesting, I promise you. I promise you're listening and you're thinking, wow, this is not that interesting. It is, but it'll get, when we start talking about sin or even next week, Special Revelation.
Well, Special Revelation is probably a million times better than
Yeah, Revelation. The work of God.
For obvious reasons.
When we get to the end and start talking about Revelation.
Ooh. How's God going to end all this?
Yeah, the end times, eschatology, stuff like that. That stuff will get a little bit more into it.
Helicopters, tanks.
Yeah, what is it? Who knows? But we are for the word, for the truth, and for the church. Thanks again for listening to the Pastor and Intern's podcast.